Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. We are going way back in time today to the world of ancient trade routes and, well, you know, those sacred sites in South Asia.
Okay.
You've actually given me some really cool sources on Buddhist monasteries, Hindu temples, and maritime trade. So
right.
Let's see what we can discover about all of this.
You know, I think you'll find this pretty interesting because... You know, we tend to think of these sacred sites as, you know, kind of isolated places, you know, for worship and stuff. But looking at these sources, it's clear they were very much vibrant hubs.
Really?
Tightly connected to these ancient trade routes.
Okay, so let's jump right into it with these Buddhist monastic circuits.
Right.
These sources suggest that monasteries weren't just like peaceful retreats tucked away in the mountains.
Yeah.
They were very active participants in a huge network facilitated by trade routes.
Yeah, and they weren't just, you know, passively benefiting from trade. Think of pilgrims and those traveling monks, you know, going along these routes carrying not only religious objects, but also texts and teachings, and even like engaging in big, you know, philosophical debates along the way.
Wow.
So this is really how Buddhism spread and how it evolved,
right?
Adapting as it encountered new cultures and stuff.
So it wasn't just, you know, goods and services being traded,
right?
But also these ideas.
Oh, yeah.
And beliefs. That's so fascinating.
Yeah.
Speaking of far-reaching influence, one source dives into the Silk Road and its impact on Buddhist art and architecture.
Okay.
And it even mentions something called the Shaibanis of Bukhara. What is that?
Now, it's a mouthful, isn't it?
It is.
Basically, they were a dynasty that ruled in Central Asia, and they played a really key role in transmitting architectural styles.
Okay.
Like this Timurid Nine Bay design, which spread from places like Samarkand all the way to Mughal India.
Nine Bay design. Can you break that down a little bit for our listener?
Yeah, so imagine a building's facade divided into nine sections or bays.
Okay.
This particular style is seen in structures like the Aksaray Tomb in Samarkand, and it became super influential and actually found its way into Mughal architecture through these trade routes, which highlights how these networks weren't just about, you know, goods, but they also carried architectural blueprints and ideas across empires.
So the Silk Road was almost like an artery pumping, not just silk, but also like architectural DNA across continents.
Exactly.
Makes you think about how interconnected the world was even way back then.
Yeah.
Now, switching gears a bit, what about Hindu temples?
Okay.
They were tied into these trade networks too, right?
Absolutely. Hindu temples weren't just religious centers. They were like economic powerhouses.
Really?
The Vijayanagara Empire, a major power in South India, is a perfect example.
Uh-huh.
They were big on temple construction, and these temples became really key points along trade routes.
The source mentions these huge Raghupurams. What are those?
They are these massive gateway towers, often incredibly ornate and elaborate.
Wow.
So think of them as landmarks that would have signaled to travelers that, hey, you're approaching a major temple complex.
Right.
And not just, you know, a hub of religious activity, but economic activity, too.
So these temples weren't just places of worship. They were almost like bustling medieval market towns.
Exactly.
In their own right. I'm picturing merchants setting up shop pilgrims buying souvenirs.
Yeah.
A really vibrant scene.
Totally.
But these trade routes weren't just land-based, were they?
No.
We also have maritime connections to think about.
Yes. And your sources point out some really interesting things about that.
Okay.
You know, we tend to focus on the Silk Road a lot, but maritime trade played a really big role in connecting South Asia to the rest of the world.
Uh-huh.
In fact, maritime trade routes helped spread Vishnu worship and its iconography throughout Southeast Asia.
That's incredible. Did the sources say how that happened?
Yeah.
I mean, how did a deity from South Asia gain a foothold in Southeast Asia through trade?
Well, one key factor was this concept of avatars in Vishnu worship.
Okay.
And this concept allowed for the absorption of pre-existing regional deities.
Okay.
Making it easier for different cultures to connect with Vishnu.
Interesting.
For example, Krishna, originally a local cowherd deity, became incorporated as the eighth avatar of Vishnu, the central figure of the Bhagavad Gita.
Wow.
And this adaptability helped Vishnu worship to spread far and wide.
That is a fascinating example of how religious ideas can evolve and adapt as they travel across cultures. It's almost like cultural fusion, but in the world of religion.
Right.
And speaking of cultural fusion, it makes me think about all those spices that traveled from South Asia to other parts of the world through maritime trade.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Imagine Roman cuisine without pepper. These everyday ingredients are a testament to the reach and impact of these maritime trade networks connecting distant cultures through something as simple as flavor. You know, it really makes you think about how something so simple as spices can connect us to these vast historical networks, but it also makes you wonder, what were the driving forces behind these ancient trade routes in the first place? I mean, was it purely economic gain, or were there other motivations at play?
That is a great question.
Yeah.
It seems like it was a mix of factors. The sources mention how controlling these trade routes meant controlling wealth and resources.
Right.
Especially for empires like Vijayanagara. But there's also this really fascinating passage about the role of pilgrimage in shaping these routes.
Yeah, it mentions how pilgrimages, especially in the context of Buddhism, weren't just, you know, spiritual journeys.
Right.
They also stimulated economic activity along the way. Think about it. Pilgrims need food, they need lodging, they need religious objects.
Right.
This created a demand that merchants and artisans were eager to meet, setting up shop along these, you know, well-traveled paths.
So it was a mutually beneficial relationship.
Yeah.
Pilgrims got what they needed, and the economy thrived along these pilgrimage routes. It makes me wonder if the religious institutions themselves benefited from this economic activity.
Oh, they absolutely did. As trade flourished, so too did the wealth of temples and monasteries that were connected to these routes.
Mm-hmm.
They became patrons of architecture scholarship, you know, further enriching the cultural landscape. It was a symbiotic relationship where trade and religion kind of fueled each other's growth.
It seems like a win-win for everyone involved.
Yeah.
But I have to ask, did everyone benefit equally from these trade routes, or were there some downsides as well? I mean, we can't just paint this rosy picture of the past, right?
You're absolutely right. While trade brought prosperity to some, it's important to acknowledge that there were probably instances of exploitation and inequality as well.
Right.
One source focusing on the Dutch East India Company's tea trade touches upon this, mentioning the vast quantities of goods exchanged and the complex networks involved.
It makes you think about the labor practices involved and the potential for imbalances of power within such a huge system. I guess even in the ancient world, trade wasn't always a force for good. It could also be an avenue for exploitation and even conflict.
Exactly. It's crucial to look at both the positive and negative aspects of these historical processes, and it's a theme that continues to resonate today as we deal with the implications of globalization and international trade in our own time.
Speaking of globalization, it's remarkable how these ancient trade routes paved the way for a more interconnected world long before we had the internet or airplanes.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder what it was like for the people living along these routes, experiencing these exchanges of goods and ideas and cultures firsthand.
It's fascinating to consider how people perceived these interactions.
Mm.
One source mentions how Buddhist ritual practices evolved as Buddhism spread along these routes, reflecting both continuity and change.
So it wasn't just a one-way transmission of culture.
Right.
There was this dynamic exchange and adaptation happening.
Yeah.
With local beliefs and practices influencing these incoming ideas, it's like a cultural conversation happening over centuries.
That's a great way to put it. And these cultural exchanges had profound social and political implications as well. There's a source that discusses how trade played a role in shaping social hierarchies and power structures in India.
It's interesting to think about how trade could create opportunities for some while also reinforcing existing inequalities for others. It's a reminder that these historical processes were complex and had multifaceted effects on different groups of people.
Absolutely. And those complexities are evident in several sources that discuss the rise and fall of empires, patterns of migration, and the development of distinct regional cultures, all influenced by trade.
It's remarkable how these threads, trade, religion, culture, and politics, are all interwoven in the tapestry of history. And it makes you realize how much our world today is shaped by these events and interactions of the past.
Yeah, it really makes you think about these long-term consequences, you know, how events from centuries ago can just ripple through time. And while we've been talking about the cultural and economic impacts, we should probably think about the environmental impact of these ancient trade routes, too.
That's a really good point. You know, we tend to focus so much on the human side of history.
Yeah.
But it's so important to remember that all of these activities had a huge impact on the natural world.
Absolutely. And one of the sources you gave me actually goes into this, talking about how trade, particularly during the colonial era, affected the environment.
Right.
You know, the pursuit of profit and the demand for certain resources sometimes came at a cost.
It's a good reminder that actions have consequences, even those unintended ones. It makes you think, you know, did people back then have any concept of sustainability?
Right.
Or were they really just focused on immediate gains?
That's a great question. I don't know, but shifting gears a bit, I'm curious about the role of geography in all of this.
Okay.
We've been talking about these massive trade routes,
Right.
but I imagine the physical landscape played a big part in shaping where these routes actually went.
Absolutely. One of the sources talks about how India's diverse geography, with its mountains and rivers and plains, influenced everything from settlement patterns to the paths of these trade routes.
It makes sense. Mountains could be like barriers,
Yeah.
and rivers would provide natural pathways for travel and commerce.
Yeah.
So the very lay of the land really influenced not only where people lived, but
Yeah.
also how they interacted and traded with each other.
It's just fascinating how geography and human activity are so interconnected, like a dance between humans and nature, each shaping the other over time.
Totally.
But let's bring this back to the present day.
Yeah.
How do you think these ancient trade routes resonate with our world today? What lessons can we learn from them?
I think one major takeaway is the interconnectedness of our world, Just as these ancient routes link distant regions, globalization connects us today on an even bigger scale.
Right.
It's like a digital Silk Road, right?
Yeah.
With information, goods, and ideas flowing across borders at an unprecedented pace.
It really makes you think about the opportunities and the challenges
Yeah.
that come with this level of interconnectedness.
Uh-huh.
Just like in the past, there's that potential for cultural exchange and economic growth,
Right.
but also the risk of exploitation and conflict.
Exactly. And
Huh.
studying history, especially something like these ancient trade routes, gives us valuable insights into these complex dynamics. It helps us understand how interconnectedness has shaped societies and cultures and even the environment throughout history.
It's like having a roadmap of the past to guide us through the challenges of the present.
Exactly.
And speaking of challenges, one thing that really struck me while going through these sources was the persistence of conflict throughout history. Despite the potential for cooperation and cultural exchange, there always seems to be this struggle for power and resources.
You're right. Several of your sources touch upon this, talking about the rise and fall of empires, political struggles, and the legacies of colonialism. It's a reminder that progress isn't linear, and history is full of, complexities and contradictions.
It's a sobering thought, but an important one too. It reminds us to be mindful of the past and to learn from its triumphs and its tragedies.
Absolutely.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into ancient trade routes, what's the final thought you want to leave with our listener?
I think the biggest takeaway is that these ancient trade routes weren't just about moving goods. They were conduits for ideas, beliefs, cultural practices,
Right.
shaping the very world we live in today.
Yeah.
And just as those ancient routes left their mark on the landscape, our choices today will shape the world of tomorrow.
It's a powerful reminder that we're all a part of a larger story, a story that unfolds across generations. And understanding that story can help us make more informed decisions and hopefully create a more just and equitable world. Thanks for joining us on this journey through time, and until next time, keep exploring.